listening to Trending with Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timory holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Welcome back, friends. It's great to be with you. I have in studio with me, big surprise, Chris Mueller is back from Everyday Catholic.
Yeah, hey guys, how's everybody doing out there in Radio Land?
Awesome to have you. What's new in your world?
Just been working hard on getting the Everyday Catholic show up and running. We're producing episodes now full time. We've got a couple podcasts that we're doing. You can check those out at everydaycatholic.com. So yeah, it's been great. You know, a big family, six kids. I'm exhausted.
Well, the good news is that you will be releasing your first episodes of the Chris Mueller Project, hopefully next spring.
Yeah, coming up very soon. That's exactly right. So we're excited to get that out there, because what we found is everyone we've shown kind of our test clips to agrees that this is something that there's nothing out there like it. It's a way to teach the faith in a way that families can digest and enjoy. And it's in an entertaining way to do it. And so we're trying to reach those people who aren't reached by some of the more, I don't want to say traditional, but just what's out there right now. This is another take.
Excellent. Coming up on the show, we're going to be discussing an actress and her take on the body, kind of some of the issues of body shaming in the culture. It's actress Lily Reinhart from that show Riverdale, and really makes us ask the question, what are our bodies made for? One country is really facing the issue of a major sexual assaults on the rise, and they're doing something about it. So stay tuned to hear what that is. Also, we just had the election this past week. There are some great opportunities for celebration, but Vogue has a really interesting question to ask that seems more separating than collaborative with the future of women and women's rights. Also, why is it that it's so much easier for a person to give someone a condom than a water bottle? We'd rather control the population than help those who are in need. We're going to talk a little bit about that in the fight in Africa, along with the dichotomy of medicine, especially in the pro-life movement. I want to start, Chris, today. We're talking about Lily Reinhart. She was just made Woman of the Year for Glamour, and she came out talking quite a bit about how the industry has placed so much pressure on women in their bodies, and how she herself felt that she would never have an industry perfect body, and said, you know, this body shaming is an issue.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And as we as a culture get more and more visual, I mean, you look at social media now, it's all visual driven, and Instagram model is now a thing. Like, that's like people say, what do you do? I'm an Instagram model. But no, you're not. You're just a narcissist. But anyway,
Chris, it's come on, become you know, more you've and more got your thing. You've got your duck lip side angle.
Oh, I actually put Instagram on my phone one day a week. I'll post a meme and then I take it off my phone. I just don't, like, I've said this many times, like, Instagram is not my, it's not my thing. I feel like we're pushing people away from thought and into emotion, and we drive that with images so much. I mean, it's not a new problem in Hollywood. It's always been the way it is, that we're focused on image, but I feel like it is getting more and more difficult, more and more focused, and the pressure, I think, is going down further and further to younger and younger kids, which is unfortunate.
Well, and this is so true, and this is something Lily Reinhart is really focusing on, how any more you can look at your body and go, well, all that has to be done is a nip and tuck here, some surgery there, the right camera angle, some Photoshop editing software, and you can look a way that is expected of you today. And we could tie in the issue of pornography, because the reality is,
oh, absolutely,
that it's hyper-produced in a way that's edited. I mean, I've seen these videos, I know you've seen them as well, where they basically take a woman laying on her side on a couch, let's say, and with no makeup on, suddenly give her long, pretty luscious hair, her legs are lengthened and her thighs are chopped part of them off and her butt elevated. It's so incredible how they can do that, but manipulative.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They've done animal studies where they have taken, like, butterflies, for instance, and they've put in artificial butterflies that have more vibrant wings or larger wingspans, and the males are all attracted to the artificial, fake, unrealistic ones, right? Or, for instance, or with birds, same thing. They've made the females more colorful or more, you know, more large, whatever. And they'll all be attracted to those. And so there are certain cues that we look for that signal health, that signal fertility, that signal, you know, all those genetic traits are going to make for a good match, in a sense. And the problem is, you can take that to its unrealistic extreme, and I think that's where we're at now.
And it's interesting as you're mentioning this, because I remember when we were at the safari park down in San Diego not too long ago, and they were talking about how they have a huge cheetah breeding program there, and how actually the female cheetahs who are in that age range to have more cheetah babies, basically they only ovulate when there's a male cheetah present that is of a high enough caliber to produce offspring with.
Yeah, if he's not an alpha, there's no point.
No point in ovulating. And it's just so interesting because we have that mindset. We're going to be talking on the next episode as well about how men really do want to have children, and they're hitting a point in their career and they're going, well, all these women aren't really interested in babies right now. We're settling down. So they're seeking other means. That's in the next episode. But Chris, really interesting thing, and I think that this all comes together. It makes us ask the question, what is the body made for?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, what are human beings for? And we've gotten so far from that we've made, you know, and the church is talking about this so eloquently over the years that we've dehumanized human beings. We've made ourselves a means to someone else's pleasure, mm-hmm. right? And that's not the end we were created for. But it keeps coming back. And, you know, I think it's why you look at like theology of the body, for instance. You know, right as we're getting ready to cross into this new millennium, Pope John Paul II gives this teaching, this long, beautiful teaching, reminding us that the closer we draw to Christ, the more human we become. Right? The more that chastity becomes our life, the more we protect the humanity of each individual. And, you know, so necessary, so poignant, so at the right moment. Unfortunately, the culture hasn't adopted it. And the church, in a large sense, is still just kind of discovering it. And so, yeah, we look at what's happened is instead of saying that you have dignity, that you've been made in the image and likeness of God, that you are a walking, talking icon of the Lord, filled with the Holy Spirit of God, you've become an object for someone else's pleasure.
And Chris, I love how you talk about how the church is still discovering this, because I can't tell you how many adult Catholics today, you suddenly point out, this is what the church teaches about sexuality. This is theology of the body, which has been built on the church's tradition of sexuality for many years, just brought to us yet again in the 21st century. And people are saying, this is radically transformative. Like, I like that. That's not what my marriage was necessarily taught to be, but that's what I want.
Right. We've been teaching liberation, but it's not. I mean, as a culture, we've been teaching liberation, but it's not. We've been teaching slavery. We've been calling it liberation. We've been saying that you have freedom, but ultimately you're not, because now you face all of the pressures of this. You're there to satisfy someone, or to be an object of someone, or to make someone want you. You know, and none of that is inherent to who you are.
Well, and you see this having children, the challenge to teach them what their bodies are for. And naturally, we're not going to say, hey, your body's just made for sex, but you have sexual integrity. Who you are, there's something you can do with it. You can worship, you can serve, you can give, you can actually give your body physically to another person, but in the right context. And that's kind of an ideology we have to start to ingrain at a young age. And I'm seeing a really awesome example of this being done in a number of the young Catholic parents today.
Yeah, I remember in my 20s, my sister sending me Scott Hahn tapes and Scott Hahn talking about marriage, how the Catholic Church isn't anti-sex. We're pro-sex. I mean, we're so pro-sex that it's part of marriage. It's almost sacramental, right? And the reason we so strongly object to the sexualization of young children, the sexualization outside of marriage, is because it takes what God has made sacred and it profanes it. What God has made good, and it makes it tarnished, right? And so we want to continue to protect that.
Here's an example where we see that it's been tarnished. Other cultures, not just the American culture, is really struggling with this. A few weeks ago, I brought to you the story that Nepal is really banning across online industries the widespread use of pornography in their country. Well, India is doing the same. They are seeing such high numbers of sexual assault, specifically of men against women. They're saying the expectations placed on women, the images being portrayed, are hugely impactful, and it's destroying just a basic human respect for another person in our country. And so they've banned over 800 websites that produce pornography.
That's fantastic. We need to wake up here in the West. We have to realize that this stuff is not benign. I mean, you look at the UK with their attempts now to put like an age wall in. They're trying to do something about it. India's realized, hey, we have completely taken away the dignity of human beings. Nepal, we have to do something about this. You know, there's a statistic that just came out. It was a study. Suicide rates among adolescent women are spiking.
It's
why?
Heartbreaking.
Because they're measuring themselves up against all the social media stuff, all the pressure to be some kind of walking, talking pornography for young men, and it's completely unhealthy. You know, you look at how can you have a healthy relationship with your spouse someday when you, your whole conception of what is natural is unnatural? Your whole conception of what's normal is abnormal, right? But that's what they sell. It's funny you said, like, it's not just the United States. Unfortunately, we are the exporter of these things. We're the ones who are selling it. We're the ones who are sending it abroad. We're the ones driving that trend. And other countries now are saying, hell no, we don't want your stuff in our country anymore.
Well, this is an example of freedom having gone wrong. Freedom allows us to perform our sacred duty. Just like Sunday is a holy day of obligation every Sunday, we're obliged to go. Obligation is a good thing. But I want to talk here, looking at some of these statistics, there have been over 50 academic studies that link pornography and abuse. And when you look at this, we're seeing that pornography is really normalizing sexual abuse. In fact, we're seeing in one study done back in 2014 that it studied how high school students, young people, were looking at sexual abuse and pornography. And 40% of high school students were looking at rape pornography specifically. And wow. 76% of those, so 3 out of 4 kids who were looking at that rape pornography, actually desired sexual intimacy in that way, but many of them thought it was okay to be aggressive.
Yeah, it's so, you know, as a parent, if you don't have some sort of filtering on your computers and your devices, your kids will be confronted by this stuff and you will have no one to blame but yourself. If someone walked into your house and started showing your kids graphic rape pornography, you would say, no. But if you're not closing that door, you're the one who's showing it to your kids.
And Chris, this is something that you and I are both seeing when we're speaking at parishes across the country. Adults are saying, please tell us, we don't know and we need the resources. We'll be right back on Trending with Chris Mueller and Timmery Millington.
Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Why do white women keep voting against their own interests? This is a question that Vogue magazine asked after the election last week, and Chris Mueller is here. Chris, I want to talk about this because what we're seeing is Vogue magazine is basically shaming women, and really what women's interests are to them are abortion, hormonal contraception, and complete sexual liberation and freedom.
Yeah, it's the politics of identity, the politics of, well, women voters or men voters or black voters or white voters or Asian voters or Mexican voters. Like, it's all devices and wrong. Like, to say that women are monolithic, like every woman should do X, Y, and Z is insane. But that's how you create the Democratic Party. And I hate to say it that way, but you know, you look at this liberal movement. We need to have women voters. Like, women are voting against their interests. Well, who decided that killing your infant children in the womb was in women's interests? Particularly when you look at sex selective abortions. Like, it's actually against women's interests to continue to vote this way because we know that they're killing more little girls than they are boys. It's disgusting.
There's a shocking ad that came out. This is a little teaser. Be sure to check out the next episode of Trending. Go to radiotrending.com. We're not talking about it today, where it's kind of using this campaign ad to promote abortion, but in a way that's so radically shocking, but it actually really does show their ideology. So be sure to tune in for that. You can watch us live on social media as well to catch that episode. But Chris, looking at this, it really kind of is shaping the issue that women need to be separated from other different types of groups, whether women need to be separated from men and how they vote, women need to be separated from other women and how they vote, and that there is a right and wrong way to vote based on your political, religious, ethnic mindset, essentially.
Yeah, it's so weird because on the one hand, everybody's the same. We shouldn't notice any difference between men and women. But on the other hand, no, women need to be specifically this. And if you're not with us, you're against us. And that's the, you know, and again, I go back to this. How does abortion help women other than by making men not accountable for actions or not accountable to someone or making sex completely devoid of any commitment? Well, that doesn't help women. It objectifies women. It makes women this, again, objects of someone else's desire, objects of someone else's pleasure. It's what we talked about last segment. We've gotten away from what we were made for, right? And again, we've seen that. The statistics on marriage, on birth outside of wedlock since the advent of abortion have skyrocketed, right? The instances of sexually transmitted disease since the advent of abortion and free contraception, all that stuff, have skyrocketed.
They're untreatable.
Untreatable.
Because it's so prominent.
You know, and so the dissolution of the family, all of these things are a result of these things that are better for women. Well, sorry, guys, statistically speaking, you're selling a lie and you're doing it in a bold-faced way. We just have to call them on it.
But you know what's great? The fact that Vogue felt the necessity to come out saying, hey, why do white women keep voting against women's interests? They're basically saying, hey, a lot of people out there disagree with abortion, disagree with contraception. We over here think that's a basic human right and basic healthcare. But the reality is that truth is truth. Whether you're male, female, whatever religious, ethnic background you come from, it is something that we can reason to, speak up for. And it's a common interest that naturally we do have, although we've tried to manipulate our nature to live and stand for something else.
Yeah, it's, again, just look at the fruit, right? Like Jesus, like the tree, this Jesus says, like, if the tree is bearing bad fruit, it's a bad tree. This is a bad tree. And I'm a Christian. I'm a Catholic. I believe abortion is wrong because it's the murder of a child. It's taking a sacred image and likeness of God, created to be loved and to know the love of God. And you're killing that life in the womb for really your own convenience a lot of times. That's where I stand. But just look at the statistics. You don't need to be a believer to see that this is just bad for people.
It's human nature, and that's something we share. But we've gotten to the point, Chris, where although we have human nature in common, my mom was talking about this the other day. She said it used to be, you know, this idea of one nation under God. We had families. We had these basic common interests. People aren't having families anymore. Not everyone believes in God. And so that basic human common interest that we might have with our enemies is really being depleted. Yet we are still seeing examples of this. For example, West Virginia, praise God. This is incredible news. They just voted on Amendment 1, which essentially, Chris, says that nothing in this Constitution secures nor protects a right to abortion or requires the right to abortion. Essentially, what this is doing, Chris, is it's preventing any Medicaid funding from going to pay for abortion, to killing human lives. And this is a truth principle.
Yeah, you know, you look at the way the country is broken up, and I say we're more divided now than we haven't been a long time. People say that it's hyperbole. But you look at the way the country breaks out in like an electoral map, and what you're seeing is states like West Virginia, Alabama, you know, rural states are saying, you know what? No, this is not, we're not buying into this. And what inevitably happens is these things get challenged. They end up in the Supreme Court. And you look at, why is the Supreme Court important? Why are presidential elections important? Because that's where this ends up, right? States like West Virginia asserting their right as states to say, well, no, we're not going to do it. The people of West Virginia don't want it, and so we're not doing it. It's morally wrong. It's repugnant. Ends up in the Supreme Court. Well, if you have a court that will rule constitutionally, they're going to say, well, you're right. If you have a court that's going to rule kind of an activist sort of way, they're going to say, no, you have to do what we say, and that's the way it is, right? So I look at that and I go, these are really awesome things that are happening in Alabama, that are happening throughout the country, but we have to keep your eye on that. Well, where is that going to end up? These are going to get attacked. These are going to get litigated, and they're going to end up in appellate courts. They're going to end up at the Supreme Court. And ultimately, that is going to be the battleground where these things are fought.
But this is a great example where political advocacy and the law really do matter, because the more we can have them discussed and fought, the more we can get different court cases on the books, gives us a greater opportunity to defend and establish human life as a basic right from natural conception to natural death. And that's something we have to stand for. That's something that, like you just mentioned, not only was West Virginia voting on this past week, but also Alabama made an amendment to their constitution as well, protecting the right, not protecting the right to abortion, and recognizing the sanctity, the specialness of human life for the unborn children. And the fact that we see that language, unborn children, is huge. But here's what the conversation comes down to, Chris. It comes down to a question of a child either being wanted or unwanted. So everything's relative. It's either true or my truth. And this is what's so heartbreaking, is that we have to break through this cultural mindset that if a child is unwanted, the life isn't worth being lived or fought for even.
Yeah, it's, we have such a utilitarian view on human life, right? It has to do with what I want. You know, I taught workshops over the summer on relativism, you know? And what was terrifying is how that is the dominant cultural viewpoint. And I was at a place where you'd think of, you know, strong Catholic families, kids who are growing up in a strong culture of Catholicism. And even there, it's entrenched itself.
Were these workshops primarily with adults or...
Young adults. We're talking people from like 18 to 30.
So I have a question for you, because this is something I also see. They'll then, do you have Q&A sessions in these circumstances?
Yeah, totally.
So then what happens is you get questions that are fired at you that are very relative, and you end up getting to fire back and question their motives.
Right.
What ends up happening in those instances?
Well, you prove the logical fallacy of it.
Well, and what happens is no one ever challenges that mindset. No one asks them questions. So all of a sudden their arguments that they think are rock solid in their mind truth really break down just by you standing there and asking them a question back.
Absolutely. But we've got this crazy notion that you're not supposed to talk about religion or politics in polite conversation. And so no one talks about it. Instead, we just go on social media and blast each other. And we get more entrenched in our little tribes. And you're right. You're absolutely right. If we just stand up and we say, well, hold on a second. In love, obviously. See, that's crazy. In love, right? But like, okay, play that out. Why does that make sense? Or what about this? You know, and all of a sudden, yeah, you have to address your emotional argument in the light of reason. And that just isn't happening on a wide scale.
Well, and a great example is if we're talking about divorce, for example, and someone's justifying maybe a family member or whoever it might be getting divorced. Again, there's always context to what's going on. But if you just throw into the whole conversation, well, you may be justifying that, but what about the kids? Has anyone asked how the kids are going to handle this? The fact that that child, statistically, research speaking, that child, even if both parents are caring very well for that child is going to believe that half of me is rejected because half of who made me is being rejected by the other.
Yeah, again, and look at the whole picture. You know, what are the realities economically for the child, for yourself? What are the realities of that child as far as having to deal with two different families? All of those things. And are any of those things, could you work it out? I mean, and again, divorce is such a difficult, if you're at a position in a marriage where you're considering divorce, no one wants to be there. But that hard look to say in humility, what can I do to save this? Like, am I willing to fight for this as much as I'm willing to fight my spouse? Mm-hmm. You know, and again, that's a hard thing, and every situation is different. Absolutely.
You can find Trending on Google Play and Spotify. Turn your cell phone into a mobile radio. So you can find us also at radiotrending.com, all of the different episodes, and your favorite source for podcasting. I want to share another really exciting piece of information, Chris. Many of you know the HHS mandate. That's a Health and Human Services mandate that was requiring that employers provide hormonal contraception, abortifacients, and outright sterilization to their employees. Well, the current Trump administration has made it so that companies, organizations, can opt out of paying for things that they live against their life principles, such as contraception and abortion. This is huge because it's no longer saying, oh, just churches can get out of this and don't have to pay. But everyone, if they have a legitimate objection, don't have to pay for these issues.
Weird. Freedom of religion? That's strange.
In the United States?
I don't know. I mean, we kind of invented it, but, you know, we're experimenting with not doing it, too. Yeah, I go back to, and I hate to always talk politics. It's not all politics. This is just implementing what we have constitutionally, but this wouldn't have happened in a different political climate. If the last presidential election went a different way, this would not have happened. We would see the same lawsuits being brought against religious orders, against Catholic hospitals, against any employer who dares to have a problem. I mean, these things make a difference.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Chris Mueller is in studio with me from Everyday Catholic. You can find him at everydaycatholic.com. I had one last thought here I wanted to just touch on. We were talking about how the contraceptive mandate, now employers will no longer be forced to pay for contraception, and different types of contraceptives that actually perform abortions chemically in the earliest stages of that baby's development. Another interesting piece that is being thrown out there as a possible bill that would essentially, or as a possible Affordable Rule, which would essentially, in the Affordable Care Act, make it so that if you have a plan that pays for abortions, that actually might be sent as a separate bill to you so that your employer doesn't have to pay for it. So this is something we're going to see coming up. And we just have to emphasize, Chris said it on the last episode, this is where voting really does matter for people who are willing to uphold the sanctity of human life.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm not endorsing a candidate. I'm not endorsing an administration. But I am saying that it would not have looked this way if the last presidential election went a different way. And we have to take that into account.
And people tend to be very hopeless with politics, and I get it. Politics doesn't change everything. It doesn't always change the culture. But when certain rules, certain laws are set up, it changes the conscience of the people, and it does dictate what you can and cannot do.
Well, I mean, and again, do the most good, do the least evil. Right. And I hate to say it that way, but sometimes those are the choices you have, right? Like which, and I pick one of these, which is the least evil, you know, and sometimes it feels like that. But again, the least evil is better than
the most good.
Well, the least evil is not better than the most good.
Okay. See, just clarifying.
Yeah.
Because it gets confusing for a second, because people very quickly begin to objectify or say, well, maybe a little bit is okay.
Right.
We're saying, no, a little bit isn't okay, but you need to do as much as you can when you only have two options.
Right, exactly.
And we're called as good Catholics to be actively involved in the voting process, in our citizenship here as Americans. So really interesting work that is being done in Africa for the right to life. In Africa, the native people have no way in their own tongue of speaking about abortion as a positive thing. And this is something that we hear about from Obi Anuju, who is a major advocate for human life in African communities. She's a Nigerian, and she has gone up against people in the United Nations and all over the world, in fact, emphasizing that as people are trying to colonize Africa, what they're doing is they're trying to prevent the people of Africa from standing with their family principles, their pro-life principles.
Yeah, there's been so much emphasis by Western aid groups on family planning, on abortion, on contraceptives for Africa. And again, it has not been matched by development, right? Mm-hmm. What if instead we were really putting that money into clean water, into sanitation in areas that don't have it, into sponsoring businesses, into giving people the skills to be competitive in the world market, right? You know, how much of a difference would that be? Rather than saying we need to stop them from having kids and saying we need to put in place and help them get in place infrastructure that will support any family that they want to have, right? And it's such a different difference. But I mean, yeah, the fact that you can buy a bag of condoms cheaper than a bottle of water in parts of Africa is horrifying.
Mm.
But it's the reality.
Well, and here's what's interesting. There are over $17 million worth of funding going into funding condoms in Africa, yet there are major unmet basic human needs. Food,
yeah.
Water, education, healthcare, that these people are longing for, yet we're saying, let's just fix it with a condom. Let's just give this to you. Let's force abortion into your country, where in reality, most of Africa does not have legalized abortion, and they don't want it.
Right. Again, what was the biggest killer in the United States Civil War? It was dysentery, right? It was bad water.
Mm.
Again, in most of the world, that's a situation people face daily, is water that's not reliably clean. Africa, large portions of Africa have this problem. It's fixable, right? But we're putting the money into just getting, I mean, I hate to say it, but we're putting the money into just having less Africans,
mm-hmm.
which again, you say it that way, oh, that sounds terrible. Yes, it is terrible.
What is that? Population control.
Well, yeah.
Genocide.
It's terrible. You know, I love it. She uses a term called ideological colonization.
Mm.
And it's absolutely true. You know, you're forcing Western values or lack thereof onto people who have strong family values, strong family ties, a strong emphasis on we love and want to raise these children. And we're saying, oh, no, your children are have no value. In fact, your children are hurting you. It's so foreign and wrong. And thank goodness that Africa, for the large part, and again, Africa is many nations, many cultures. I don't want to simplify it that way. But thank goodness African nations, African peoples are saying no.
Well, and I just want to reemphasize my opening comment here for this section, Chris, that Obi Anuju talks about how in my dialect, in Nigeria, my tribe that I belong to, we do not have a way to talk about abortion in any positive light. And then she goes on to talk about how in Nigeria, we celebrate when a new life is brought into the world. And she says, you Americans, you should really work on adopting this in the West.
No, I will tell you it's absolutely true, because you walk into some places with six kids and there's not a celebration. You know, I was at church the other day. We were at confession at a parish locally here. And someone got in line behind me, and he said, oh, you got your hands full, as always happens. And I said, well, this is only part of them. The other two are in the chapel there doing a confession. They're doing their penance right now. And he goes, oh, and he stops and goes, well, are you part of some kind of a, like a community or like a
cult?
Group? Yeah, kind of. And I was like, no, we're just normal everyday Catholics. Like, this is just normal.
You're
right?
Like,
and
read the shirt.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually, I'm wearing it right now. But it's true. Like, why is it so foreign to just have kids and love kids and not look at kids as a drag on your life, but as something that enriches, and some people who enrich your life? I mean, I look at my life and I go, yeah, 20 years from now, it's going to be full. Right? Because my kids will have kids, and our life will be full of those kids. And when I don't worry about what's going to happen when I get old, because I know I'll be surrounded by people who love me. Right? Whereas if I only had two, well, I better save for retirement. Well, I probably should anyway, but I wouldn't have those securities.
Right. Yeah. I want to post a link to Obianuju's interview question that she answers when she's at the UN. It's a conference hosted by the Holy See on really dialogue over these really important issues, basic human rights, and especially the issue of population control and abortion. So you can find that link at Timory on Twitter or on Facebook as well. Be sure to check that out. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. You're listening to Trending. So during this video that's brought about where Obianuju is defending life, a question is asked by a woman of parliament, and she comes up basically saying, like, this is my principle for the work that I'm doing. She starts by qualifying this, which is so interesting. I've traveled here, I've traveled there, and just going on and on about how well traveled she is. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, just because you're well traveled makes it sound like you're more privileged than these people to begin with. But what she ends up saying is, her concept is this, quote, do no harm, allow people to make their own decisions. And she's specifically talking about their own decisions where abortion and contraception are involved.
Okay, do no harm, allow people to make their own decisions to kill their baby. Wait, okay, logical fallacy. And again, Western people, look statistically at the wreckage you've created in your own nations before you start preaching that to the rest of the world as it's a good. Like, we have to confront that, and we never do. We just double down on it. It's not working. The emperor's naked. He's got no clothes on. Stop saying they're beautiful. They're not. He's buck naked. We're ridiculous, right? But we keep pushing it out like it's, oh, this is beautiful.
Yeah, we think that we are the great humanitarians when we advocate in this way. But people today, I mean, you look at where abortion clinics are centered, where they're focused. They're focused in communities that are more impoverished. They're specifically located in African American and Hispanic communities. In fact, why is it that Planned Parenthood Federation of America has such a vested interest in Africa, in the Philippines, in Mexico? Why are they the ones advocating for population control and universal access to hormonal contraception and abortion? Because their founder, Margaret Sanger, was a major advocate for contraception and really controlling the species and, quote unquote, really getting rid of the different types of breed that we don't want.
Yeah, that's the ugly history of Planned Parenthood. It was just absolute racism and eugenics. But it's true, you know.
Well, speaking of Planned Parenthood, yesterday, Dr. Leanna Wayne, who is the new executive director, essentially, of Planned Parenthood, released her video on her very first day saying, hey, we're here. And she talks about the morality of women's health care and how important it is. And she's basically saying, hey, look, my focus is to expand women's health care. What is that? Abortion and contraception. Because we all know that if you call Planned Parenthood, there are very few, only one in my state of California, that performs mammograms on one day of the month.
Well, and again, how many kids are prescribed birth control pills to mask something rather than treat something? Mm-hmm. It's not women's health care. It's a band-aid so that you miss what's actually going on in the person.
And you know, a lot of people hear that, yet I feel like we don't talk about it enough because suddenly it touches on women's issues, women's health issues, so we avoid it. But kind of a perfect example, I myself was having a lot of medical issues. They wanted to prescribe me hormonal birth control. This was the advice that I was being given time and time again, I had extreme food allergies and autoimmune disease, essentially. Yet they kept trying to say, well, you're a woman, you're having issues, we're going to give you birth control. Of course, I refused for moral reasons, but also because research shows that hormonal birth control is not healthy for our bodies as women. It's a lie that we're being told and we're eating it.
Yeah, you're upping your chances of various kinds of cancer. I mean, absolutely. But, you know, I think there's some hope here for the church, though, because you look at where the church was born in ancient Rome, where the practice of leaving your child out for exposure was common, where that utilitarian view of humanity was common, right? And the church came in and said, no, you have dignity, you have value, you're a beloved of God, a beloved creature of God that God desires to be his beloved child. And we brought freedom to that culture, to that time. We brought Jesus Christ to that culture, that time. We need to preach the same gospel today because we have a world that is hungry for it. And the opportunity is ripe. We just need to get out there. We need to have a little courage. We need to bring Jesus to this world again.
We need to make ourselves comfortable asking questions. We need to question motives, not with judgmentalism. Yes, we can judge bad motives, but we can challenge people and their ideologies, the very questions they are asking us, especially when those conversations get heated. But Chris, something you just said is so important because actually women at the time of Christ in Greco-Roman culture actually were so incredibly attracted to the gospel because for the first time, their position in society was elevated.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So today's episode, we've been talking a lot about abortion, about women's rights, where women stand on different issues, whether it's pornography and sexual assault taking place in Nepal, in India, or it's the woman that Glamour has nominated as the Woman of the Year. We're talking about really serious issues, and we're seeing in this episode how women specifically are impacted by the issue of what seems to be idealized as women's interests. As simple as that. Women's healthcare. In the next episode, we're going to be talking about some areas where men specifically are struggling. One man who actually, quote unquote, married a hologram. And you'll hear that on the next episode. I am just shocked by where this is. And really, it may sound so out there, yet we have to talk about that. So that's coming up this week on Trending. You can head over to radiotrending.com. My guest in studio with me today is Chris Mueller from Everyday Catholic. You can find him at everydaycatholic.com. Chris, we are seeing that with the Gosnell movie. Did you hear about the Gosnell movie that came out?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that light has come to that horrific story. Also, it's a little bit upsetting. It's appropriate it came out at Halloween time,
right?
Because it's absolutely a horror story.
It's a house of horror, as they were calling it during the actual
absolutely
different legal proceedings.
Oh yeah, but I mean, stonewalled by the media, stonewalled in its release. I mean, so it's a story that needs to get out there, and hopefully, churches and people will get out there and make sure it's seen. Kind of after its wide release, but they'll get it out in DVD, they'll get it out in showings there.
Right. What was interesting, there are some theaters still showing it, but just less than a month ago when it first came out, Chris, it was fascinating because it actually, in its first weekend, made the top 10, and that's with being, I think, in a third fewer movie theaters than all the other movies on the top 10 list. And I don't think it's just because pro-lifers were going and trying to show support and get more pro-life movies, but that people were really interested, like, what is this? Why was a man suddenly investigated by the FBI for drugs, right? Drug laundering, essentially. And then suddenly he's in trouble for all of these abortions, killing women. I mean, he would actually snap the spinal cords of young children in half.
Yeah. I mean, it shouldn't surprise us that someone who's stock in trade is killing infants, late term abortion, killing infants, right? So you're talking, and again, I hate to differentiate, but you're talking a recognizable baby. This is a baby. And you'd be, if you haven't gone and looked, you would be surprised how early a baby looks like a baby, right? That's, I mean, you need to check it out.
Or sounds like a baby.
Or sounds
like
a baby's
heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
10 to 21 days.
Or feels like a baby. We know that when they do neonatal surgery, that they have to give them painkillers, right? Mm. So you're talking about babies who can feel pain, who are giving no painkillers. And so someone who has that little value in human life, the fact that they are doing these horrific things, why does that shock us?
You know, there are moments where I'm just brought to tears. I don't have children, but you do. But when I hold the children that would come into the crisis pregnancy center specifically, and I just remember holding them when the mom would be so excited sharing her baby with the women who were there fighting, advocating for that life, and I would just be brought to tears because you were one step away from being killed.
Oh, yeah.
One step away. And then you also hold family members' babies, and you're thinking, why is it that you weren't, like, no one ever desired to get rid of you? Because no matter what, before your conception, you were loved, but you were respected. The very ability to create you was respected.
You know, it's my wife and I were talking about this the other day when our 14-year-old, I looked over and they always want to hold the baby at mass, right? They always want to have the baby. Again, they argue over him.
Magnet or what is that?
I don't know. But it's everybody. It's the 14-year-old, it's the 12-year-old, it's the 10-year-old. But he had him and I saw him with his little brother. And I saw him holding him and loving him and, you know, the baby trying to stick his hands in his mouth and all that stuff. And there's a lesson on the humanity of children, right? There's a lesson there that we're not teaching as a culture. There's a lesson about there's something greater in this world than just me, right? That you may have had two kids for whatever reason, you had two kids, or one kid for whatever reason, you had one kid. But my kids get that lesson every day. You know, when they change the baby's diaper, they learn about the value of taking care of another person. I like to think that my son will look at things like abortion and they'll be horrific to him because he'll have held his weak old baby brother. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll have held and seen that. He'll know the reality of a child. It'll never be abstract to him because this is just the reality of life.
I think I mentioned this on the show a couple weeks ago, but I was praying in front of Planned Parenthood, and I just want to kind of pause for a second, you guys, because I was the only one out there, and it broke my heart that on a Saturday morning, as abortions are taking place, or you could say, oh, they're not taking place because women are walking out with a pill. No, abortions are in the process of happening. Mm-hmm. No one's there, and it broke my heart, but as I was standing there, you know, I'm all by myself, so I'm just kind of incognito, walking back and forth, praying the rosary. I was alone, so I didn't sidewalk counsel because that could be very dangerous if you're by yourself, but I'm passing by Subway just next door, Chris, and as I'm there, a young girl and one of her younger siblings comes running out of Subway, and the little girl that's like maybe two or so ends up running kind of for the street, for the parking lot, but not completely. Well, her older sister, maybe about 9 years old, quickly corrals her before she could even get halfway across that sidewalk to the parking lot. The fact that that young girl saw that her baby sibling was worth protecting was so fundamental, yet right here, women 20, 30, 40 years old are walking right into Planned Parenthood.
Well, and I think that also goes to the argument of viability. People say, oh, well, you know, they're not viable yet. Well, I'm sorry, like 2-year-olds aren't viable yet, right? If they, you know, every child needs care. I mean, I know some 18-year-olds that aren't viable yet, really, right? And, you know, but you learn that when you have kids around that they need care, and that's okay, right? Yes. My life is enriched. Now, a friend of mine put out a video like life after Roe v. Wade, right? What does that look like? Well, I think we as Catholics, we as Christians, as we as believers, we as people who value human life, we need to really start looking at how are we invested in being there for people caught in these situations. You know, again, it's the counseling centers for people who are coming in after they've chosen life. How are we going to help them be successful? How are we going to help them have the life for that child we want them to have for that child, so that they're not a cautionary tale Planned Parenthood uses, right? Mm-hmm. And that's on us.
Yeah, that's on us as a society. That's us. So being willing, as you often say, Chris, to lean in.
Yeah.
What can we do to help the people right next to us?
I would even say, I think we need to change our language from on us as a society to say it's on me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I need to own that because it's so easy to say, well, I get my money on Sunday.
Well,
right?
And that was how I felt when I was in front of Planned
Parenthood. Well, you do it. I mean,
you
absolutely put your money where your mouth is. You do the counseling, you go out, you talk to families. I mean, I assume you give money. I mean, like, you put your money where your mouth is. You put your life where your mouth is.
But that's also where it's challenging, because all of us, though, have the ability to say, man, I worked all week. I'm exhausted. This is me. This is my only Saturday off for the last month. It's like, do I go and visit family? Do I stop and get laundry done? But I can spare 1 hour, 2 hours in the morning. Like, we can. And even families with children, I know that's hard, but man, talk about forging a pro-life position. Take them in front of that abortion clinic.
Oh, yeah. And something we've done with them. And yeah, it's a powerful moment of memory in my son's life and my daughter's life to say, I was part of saving lives that day.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. But you know, I look at my brother and my sister-in-law who fostered to adopt, right? Mm. Such a hard thing to do, but there's a little boy there who's a member of our family who could very well have been aborted. But his mother, for whatever reason, chose life, and they were there to say, well, she wasn't able to give him the life he deserves. We will.
Look at what one yes did.
Absolutely.
One yes did. You know, and I want to talk really quickly here. Two things that really tie in together. That's the dichotomy of medicine today. You know, we were talking about Gosnell and his house of horror and how he was investigated by the FBI originally for drugs and all the drugs and narcotics or opioids that he was opening up for the community. I think like 300 prescriptions a night is what he was prescribing. Mm. And then suddenly they find out all of these aborted babies are in his home. Well, there's another person more recently in Texas, who is being called another Gosnell because he's been going before the medical board, I think, since 2013. And Chris, his own employees, his own staff turned against him because he had been performing illegal abortions. This is what he was doing. He was taking their heads of the babies later term and twisting them off after the baby was born alive. He was slicing their spinal cords. He was even taking the soft spots of the baby's heads and pressing sharp instruments into these children. And the nurses or different women, who I don't even think I can call them nurses, although they have come out speaking against this, have talked about how they would see the stomach of the baby breathing before he did this. And yet this isn't an isolated situation. He may be in trouble with the FBI now, but this is something happening every day. And on the opposite side, sometime of that same hospital, here's a dichotomy of medicine. The UK, we've been doing this in the US for years, but the UK just had their debut surgery, in utero surgery, with 30 doctors making it so that a child with spinal bifida could have a little, basically stitches made to their spinal cord so that he could be healed in the womb.
We've made the value of life relative, and it isn't, but as a culture, we've said it is, right? And so you have a child who is breathing outside of the womb, who is alive and healthy, and maybe needed a little, you know, pre-birth care, but how sick, how evil are you that you could do what this man has done? I have a hard time even saying, oh, you could twist a baby's head like livestock, right? Mm.
Gosh.
Again, this is a child who, I mean, they're going in and they're doing, on children who are younger, they're going in to do surgeries to provide these children with better quality of life, to have
praise
them.
Praise God.
Right. So on one hand, you go, gosh, we've proven that these are little human beings, right? That again, like we ever needed to prove, but we have. It's scientifically there, but we're saying, yes, we know all that, but we choose anyway. That to kill them. For whatever reason, we choose to kill them.
I'm so glad to see that pioneering medicine is taking place in the UK and that we're fighting to save lives rather than destroy them. We need to share these stories. Tweet out this link, because I'm going to tweet out a link to this article. But it's been great having you guys all join us. You can reach me on Twitter at TIMMERIE. That's Timmery. If you enjoyed the show, you can send me a note at radiotrending.com. Chris, where can people find you?
Just go to everydaycatholic.com and you can send me a message at chris@everydaycatholic.com.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To learn more about Timmery Millington, visit timmery.com.